Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses of Seizures. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-host of this weekly journey through all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Woohoo! So this is our 110th episode.
110.
Okay, so we have a couple of announcements. First of all, the big announcement is that I wrote a book last year.
What?
And it is now...
You think you're so smart just because you can read...
It's called Speed Brewing. It's techniques and recipes for fast fermenting beers, ciders, meads, and more. That's what occupied a lot of my time last year. So it is being published by Voyager Press on June 1st. You can pre-order it now if you so would like to do that. Anyway, more coming soon, but I did want to announce it. I had a lot of fun developing recipes and experimenting with techniques and all kinds of stuff. And I'm continuing to do so. So we're going to basically I have a little more time now that the book is done to just do some fun free-for-all fermentations. So I'm launching a new series in the Cousette household.
What is that new series, Mary?
Will It Ferment?
Will It Ferment? And what is today's project, the one that we were looking at earlier?
So I got some juice, some kind of mixed juice from Trader Joe's. So basically, I'm going to go along my favorite grocery store shelves, particularly looking for interesting international ingredients that I haven't used so much and other things, and we'll see if they ferment and how well they do so.
Key thing is preservative-free, right?
Yeah, although I think citric acid will work. I mean, you can use like things with citric acid will ferment. Depends on how much.
Dig it.
Yeah.
With yeast nutrient and all that things.
Yes, exactly.
But to this regard, to these things. But
anyway, we'll be talking more about seasonal fermentation, seasonal beverages, and other kinds of experimentations on the show in the months to come.
But what about right now? I want to talk about it now. This weekend, you poured something really awesome see?
All right, so I did get an opportunity to pour either recipes directly from the book or some recipes that were based on things that I played with in the book. So last Sunday at Brunity, which I think we already mentioned, right? Monday? Maybe not.
Yep.
Anyway, we did all the homebrew clubs of New York City and New Jersey came together and poured some absolutely amazing homebrews, all for charity.
Actually, we did not mention it because we pre-taped last week. So, yeah.
So
we raised $5,238 for City Harvest in this one event alone. And it was pretty awesome. We got all the New York City homebrewers together under one, and New Jersey. Under one roof and for a good cause. We had a band, the Homebrewsicians, and the set actually went better than expected. Highly entertaining, totally fun.
There is video out there if you're interested.
But the time was delicious, and the reason we're remembering this now is because you served a jasmine green tea.
Yep, a fermented jasmine green tea recipe, which is in the book, and that was received really, really well. That keg actually kicked. Actually, both my kegs kicked. They're only 3-gallon kegs, so pretty easy to kick those. And I fermented a mixed berry white peppercorn from Cambodia short mead, and that also was very well received. And then on this past Saturday, as also Chris and I have had a crazy beer week between our new Cousette libations, our first Gypsy Brewing release, Cousette Grisette, as well as all of our homebrewing adventures. So on Saturday at Arrogant Swine, which is an absolutely amazing barbecue joint in Bushwick, owned by Tyson Ho, Josh Bernstein, who's a fabulous writer, and Chris put on a
Sausage and Beer Festival
called Winter's
Grind. About 16 professional brews and then also alongside about 9 home brews. 11 home brews. And among them was Mary's Elvis Sammy. explain what that is. And
peanut
how you
butter,
did that.
Bacon, and banana short mead.
Which is freaking delicious.
I know. Really well. I was nervous, but we'll talk about how I made that, actually. We're not going to do that tonight. We'll do that in a
show. Is there any here tonight?
There's not, man. We kicked the keg.
You're killing me.
Fermented coconut lemongrass green tea, which also we kicked. So it's good, though, to, you know. I mean, again, three gallon kegs are easy to kick, but still, it was great. Anyway, we had a lot of fun at that. It's been super fun to just be able to experiment with things like an Elvis sandwich short mead and not, you know, without any other reason than just to experiment and make something good to drink. So I have two more announcements. These are both coming up the weekend. If you're in New York City or anywhere around New York City, or you're visiting New York City, the weekend of March 21st and 22nd, there are two amazing events going on. First is at Three's Brewing. That's one of our newest brewery restaurants in Gowanus, Brooklyn. They're having a Saison Day in collaboration with Allagash Brewing Company. They're going to have a Saison homebrew contest, and I am making one of their Saisons. I'm going to actually make 2 3-gallon experimental batches. And then the next day, on Sunday, from 4 to 8 p.m., is the annual Ferment Festival, and that's put on by Zachary Schulman. He's actually going to be on our show the Monday before that. And I will also be teaching a free workshop. There's some awesome free workshops. So far, there are four. Nukazuki, which is Japanese rice brand pickles, from Michaela Hayes, who we've had on the show before. Wild Vegetable Fermentation with Tara Witsit, founder of Fermentation on Wheels, whom we also had on the show. International Breads, How to Make Idlis and Doses with Cheryl Passwater. Mm-hmm. And then I'm teaching Sassy Short Meads as well. So there's four free workshops. It's also a wonderful place to try a bunch of ferments, bring out some of your experimental events, and it's amazing. So it's going to be at the Brooklyn Free School. We'll have more information about that. And tune in on whatever that Monday is before. Monday, 22nd.
I don't have that number for you.
It's got to be 22 minus 9. That's going to be the 13th. So we'll have Zach Schulman on the 13th. Is that right? Yeah, come on, the 13th.
It's the 14th.
The 14th?
No, it's the 13th. Yeah, you're
whatever.
Right. Whatever.
Math. I need my phone, man. I can't even. Yeah. Okay, on to better, no, on to bigger and better things. So let's talk about what happened this past week. New York City Beer Week.
New York City Beer Week. An incredible 10 days of celebrating the life and culture of beer happenings, brewing, all things related in New York City. And one of the most exciting things to have happened, this is the first year of the Rupert's Cup. Jacob Rupert was a colonel in the in the army, in the regiment. He was a brewer. He was a New York City publican. He owned the New York Yankees for a while, and actually under his tenure, he actually signed the Babe Ruth onto the team. And we started the Rupert's Cup this year, which all the participating breweries had to get somebody to vote for them, and each vote cost $5, and all of that money also went to City Harvest, which is one of our favorite local charities. The people to win that award were our friends from Big Alice, which we have in the studio here today, Kyle Hurst and John Clay.
Guilty
until proven innocent, he says.
He's been called worse. Yeah, by me earlier today, probably.
So you may remember Big Alice from one of our previous shows. Last year we had Robbie on, who's a former brewer. But a lot of changes have gone on, and we're really excited about the progress. But we haven't had Kyle in the studio yet.
Or John.
Or John, either.
So Kyle, how'd you get started in this whole craft brewing business?
So I started as a home brewer in the Midwest, in Wisconsin, which, you know, the story I like to tell is, you know, Wisconsin obviously is a big beer state. You know, people can crush beers all day there. But it wasn't, or at least not until, you know, very recently, a very big craft beer state. So I spent my relative youth, we'll leave the actual ages undisclosed, but drinking a lot of, you know, really, you know, indistinct beers. And I was actually introduced to beers by a fellow homebrewer, friend of mine. And that first beer I had, like I said, I like to tell people the story of the movie Pleasantville, where everything's black and white until you, you know, start having, you know, relations, let's say. And so that was beer for me. I had this first homebrew and tasted it. It was like, wow. You know, everything was suddenly in color, and it was really, you know, kind of, you know, epiphany for me. And the next opportunity, the next holiday to come up was Father's Day. My wife bought me my first homebrew kit for Father's Day that year, which was late 90s, probably 98, I'm guessing.
So fast forward,
I moved to New York in 2007, started homebrewing, you know, with Robbie. And, you know, we entered a couple competitions, thought it would be a great idea after winning People's Choice Award at an event or two that we should open a brewery. So we did, and you know, went down that path for about a year and a half together, and we made some really, you know, big beers. We were all about you know, making really interesting, you know, kind of one-offs. We did 141 different beers on our old system before.
And the old system was how big?
10 gallons. It was a half-barrel system, so they were actually kegs. So the capacity was 15 and a half. You know, you obviously lose a lot of that. So we yielded about 10 gallons per batch, and we bottled everything in 750s and pre-sold them like a CSA. We were a CSB, and most people pre-bought our beers 6 months in advance, and we were only open 2.5 hours a week, and we're selling out everything we made.
And so we're going to take a break from that, from the past to the future, and introduce John. So, John, tell us, what is your background? How'd you get into brewing?
So I grew up in Pennsylvania, and moved up to Boston right out of high school, kind of really fell in love with the brewing scene up there, craft beer. Ended up trying to force my way into a brewery somehow, and kind of no luck with that. Moved back down to New York, and met a brewer from a brewery upstate who told me the best way is just to kind of find somewhere you can apprentice, just work for free, get as much experience as you can. So I made a list of every single brewery in New York City that I could, reached out to everyone, and Big Alice was one of the ones that got back to me, and did about 10 months with them, just cleaning fermenters and whatever else they needed me to do, and kind of that's how I got my start.
John's a machine. He's you know, didn't matter what I sat down next to him, he'd, you know, spit it out clean in a matter of time. Yeah, he's awesome. Really, really good hard worker. We were really lucky to have him.
So now we're at present day. When did you put, what kind of system did you get, and when did you guys get it in?
All right, so we expanded to a 5-barrel brew house. Actually, it was a brew pub system from Stamford, Connecticut. We found a local brew pub up there that was not renewing their lease. They had multiple locations, so they weren't going out of business, just not renewing their lease at that location. I don't know the full details, but I think they were calling the landlord's bluff because they waited to the last possible minute to sell this. And, you know, we were in a position, you know, ready to buy. Most people, when they're looking to buy, you know, new equipment, are planning out, you know, 6 months to a year down the road. And we were kind of the right buyer, right time that we were able to come in. They needed it out by the end of the month, and we were in a position to be ready to buy and you know, receive it right away, too. So beautiful system. It's copper. You know, it's a brew pub, so it's meant as a showpiece. And our space is so small that when you come to our tap room, when we get really busy, we actually overflow into our brewery space. So you actually can, you know, hang out amongst the copper and you know, kind of watch everything that's going on. It's all, you're not in, you know, you can't open and close any valves or do anything too crazy. But we do have, you know, kind of an open, inviting, where there's a bunch of glass. You can see all of the shiny fermenters and shiny copper, which is really.
It is separated, but it's separated by the required wall.
Yes.
There's just plenty for any TTB listeners.
Yeah. I'm sure they're monitoring this really closely. Yeah.
That is an awesome system, and it's such a small space. It's a crazy small space that you have over there, and it's not even that much bigger than your, or as far as like footprint, the brew house is not that much bigger than your former system.
Yeah, it was, you know, we, you know, did a lot of, you know, calculations to figure out just how big we could get within the space we're in. We'd only built out that space a year and a half earlier, and we originally had our eye on some additional space, you know, adjacent to where we were, and you know, the thought of, you know, building out a new space, only having built out another space so recently, was you know, both cost prohibitive and just not something we were prepared to do at this point.
But the other thing that this has done, and the great change that has happened with this, that came with several bright tanks, right? Serving tanks. And so that you...
Right. So in the past, you know, John can relate. He helped do a lot of the bottling when he was still interning for us. We bottled everything. So every individual, you know, bottle was individually packaged. We cleaned the bottles individually. We labeled them individually. We hand corked and tied them. And most of all, we tied champagne knots. There's a handful of people in the world that can, I think, tie a champagne knot, and most of them are related to Big Alice in some way. But it was, you know, terribly labor intensive. The huge advantage to us when we expanded to this system is, you know, brew pubs don't serve from kegs; they serve from bright tanks. So we were able to take full batches of beer, and we you know, took on just a small additional space. you know, the two, you know, house these, and then we can transfer the beer, the finished beer, carbonate it in there, and then right into our tap system in our tap room. So it's where we went from packaging, you know, 750 milliliters at a time to, you know, 155 gallons at a time. It was, significantly less labor intensive.
So you have more beer and more capacity to be able to now sell not just as part of the CSB. So you're now kegging.
That's the good and the bad of it. You know, the CSB is really kind of at the root or the heart of where we got our start, and it wasn't without the support of those people. We were able to partner with a few of the local CSBs and we ran our own, and it was kind of a great way to connect with the community because we were so small. So it was a great way to do that. But now that we're not doing bottles anymore, we can't run it the same way, but we have adapted it now to include growler fills. So you can come in once a month, fill a couple growlers, you get discounts on our merchandise, and we are now doing some barrel-aged beers we're going to be releasing in the next month or so, and our CSB members will get first crack at those a week before they become available to the public. So it's still has its advantages. It's not quite as cool as it was in the past, but still pretty cool.
Oh, no, yeah, it's still pretty definitely. Cool. Yeah. With that, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about what kind of things you're brewing. Cheers.
Familiar. Cheers.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are here in the studio with our friends from Big Alice Brewing Company, Kyle Hurst and John Kilty, who is also of the Brood Abides. And we are sipping on a really, really delicious beer, Queen's Honey Brown. Tell us a little bit about Queen's Honey Brown.
So the Queen's Honey Brown is not our newest beer, but our newest recipe. It was inspired by a trip I took with my wife. So not unlike the two of you, we're often inspired to brew by things we do together. And I'd gone to Madison, Wisconsin, and toured five breweries in an afternoon. We got a hotel and spent the night, so no concerns about that. But every one of them had a really good brown ale, and you know, brown ales is one of the, one of the first beers that that got me, at the end of we were all winding down. That got me into and excited about beer, and it's an easy transitional beer for somebody who's not necessarily into the wild extremes that IPAs and barley wines and some of the things can bring to you. So we had gotten a bunch of honey from Will Capieri in Queens, who harvests honey kind of throughout the state, but also locally. And this beer specifically had honey from five different Queens rooftop hives. So we knew we had this really cool local honey that we wanted to make a beer with. We had other plans for it, but after going out and having these browns, I hadn't drank a brown, much less brewed a brown, in a long time. And it was like an old friend. It was like, welcome back. It's good to see you again. And came back, and John and I got together. Like, we're going to come up with something. A brown ale that kind of features this local honey, and that's what we're drinking now.
Awesome. How'd you guys use the honey?
So we actually add the honey at flame out. So it's kind of compromised between doing it at the beginning, you get a bunch of fermentable sugars out of it, and you know, adding it post-fermentation where you just get a bunch of honey flavors. So we tried to you know, find that compromise and get a little bit of both. And yeah, so I think you do get a, you know, a nice, you know, honey flavor without you know, keeping it pretty low in alcohol. This one's, I think, about 5.5%.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. It's beautiful. And it adds that honey. This is me sipping beer. This is what I do. This is how I sip beer. If you ever wanted to hear it.
So let's talk about using...
And I did.
And yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about using local ingredients. So this did come up, I think, on last week's show, but as part of New York City Beer Week, a lot of the breweries that participated created a smash beer, a state malt and state hop beer, and you guys also did one.
Yep. Yeah, we did a smash. The three ingredients were the Danko Amber Rye, the Pale Two Row Vienna, and Chinook, Willamette, and Cascade.
Cascade.
Yeah, so we got all of our malts from Valley Malt, and the hops were... Do you remember the farms?
Two different farms, Peterson Farms and Bluebell.
Yeah. And you guys are a farm brewery, so you are not. This is not foreign to using these local ingredients, right?
Right. I mean, we, you know, even prior to being a farm brewery, we were always, you know, seeking out local ingredients in any way we could. So, I mean, the honey is one example, and the other beer we brought was our white stout, which is made with a locally roasted, you know, coffee. Obviously, we don't grow coffee in New York State, but right. We did find a local roaster who was able to, you know, kind of make a blend of a couple of different roasts for us, put that together, that we were able to feature that. So. It was something we'd always done, so with the farm brewery, it was easy for us in terms of that transition. You know, I think a lot of the other breweries who don't, typically use, you know, local ingredients were, you know, finding out some of the challenges we face in doing so. And I know you guys did one, and a lot of the other breweries, that was their first taste of of local ingredients and some of the challenges they can bring. So,
yeah, because I think Chris and I at the Craft Brewers Conference attended a craft maltster seminar, and they talked a little bit about, you know, how craft malt differs from, you know, kind of this mass malt that most breweries use. And I think it is you have to approach it a little bit differently. The ingredients don't necessarily, they're very unique ingredients. And, you know, even if you're getting a particular variety of hops, if it's grown here, maybe in New York State or in another state, it's not necessarily going to have the same characteristics as the traditional, maybe West Coast American hop that we're used to. What do you think, John?
Yeah, John, the smash beer was John's project, and you know we certainly worked together on it. But you know, I wanted to give him something, you know, that he could take and run with, and you know, he did a lot of the recipe creation and you know the brewing and everything involved. So I know it wasn't necessarily what he had thought and you know I guess what either of us really thought, but I know the hops in particular provided a challenge for us. You want to talk about that, John?
John, where'd you go with it? What was the beer?
So we did a dry hop double IPA, which for us isn't normal for our brewery to do. So we went that route. We really wanted to make a beer that really just showcased the malts and the hops. It finished a little sweeter than we would have liked, during dry hopping, we weren't really able to pull out a lot of those normal characteristics from the hops that we have been able to do with some other beers. So that was...
For those varieties in particular, maybe, right? Like what we...
Yeah.
But I thought it was a damn good beer. Like, I tried it at Brewer's Choice.
Thank you.
So...
Yeah, we... It wasn't what we... what I had anticipated for it, and I definitely think that has to do with just the consistency with brewing with different ingredients and from different sources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And something is common. I mean, everybody, you know, to your basic home brewer, even just your beer drinker, kind of knows what to expect from a Cascade hop, and I think, you know, something as basic as that proved to be a big challenge for us, and I think. You know, that just kind of highlights the challenges of working with local ingredients. I for one am really confident we're going to get there, and you know, all of the, you know, there's additional acreages being, you know, farmed every year, both for malts and hops, or grains, obviously. Right. Malts are grown, but you know, so I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing that, you know, aspect of agriculture really kind of grow and expand in New York State in the next
couple of years.
It's
important for all of us to keep supporting it and doing it and using it so that they can get the capabilities to, you know, accurately get the lab tests done for the alpha acids and also for the extract efficiency of the malt. I mean, and that one of the challenges of these new startup businesses is not having that funding to get those together.
Exactly.
So it's kind of a catch-22 for us. We got to keep brewing
with
it.
All that data you're used to having, you don't have. Right. Yeah. It's you're you know, kind of flying blind in a lot of the cases.
Sorry, which is part of the impetus for Andrea starting that craft maltster guild to help them get that.
And I also think that it's a matter of, like, I think some of these hop varieties, we're going to see, I mean, for instance, we dry hopped our Grisette with the Cascade. And, you know, again, it wasn't the typical Cascade that we're used to from Oregon or Washington or Idaho. But it was lovely, and it worked really well with, you know, we used a Saison yeast. But it was much more, you know, kind of floral, and it was lovely. But I think that, you know, we have to adjust our expectations as far as you know, aroma and flavor characteristics. And I think a little more, you know, some experimentation, it's great. And the other thing, though, I think the other key component of this is that we need more public awareness of what a privilege it is to drink a beer that somebody has made with locally grown ingredients. I mean, the New York State started this farm brewing license with the expectation that, you know, the brewers that have the farm license will use more local ingredients, New York State grown ingredients, and that we would have, therefore, more hop and malt or grain farms, you know?
Just because it doesn't taste like what the ingredients taste like, you know, from the West Coast or whatever, doesn't mean they're not good.
No,
they're very good, and there is a definite terroir associated not only the grains, the hops, you know, all of it. And that was the session you were talking about at CVC last year was probably the coolest session ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And something you could only do at CVC. I think there were 8 different pale ales that were just made with different regions.
A single craft malt.
With one malt. Yeah. And it was really a cool way to just sit down and taste what each region tastes like. And anybody else would be probably bored by that, but I thought it was really cool.
No, I totally agree. And I think that we will see more of an appreciation for terroir in beer. It's just not something, you know, I think that the public has to be developed. Like, again, you know, the ingredients also typically cost a little bit more at this point anyway. But I think, you know, as the public becomes more aware of this and more appreciative, that people will, I mean, it was a really special thing to be at Brewer's Choice and to be able to go around and taste, you know, each of these breweries. I mean, how many beers? We had at least 8 beers. 10 beers that were there that were made with some degree of local of New York State grown ingredients, which was an absolutely, I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah, there were double that, but there were only, I think, around 8 or 9 that were part of the our own smash.
The smash,
from the New York City Brewers.
Yeah, yeah. But even outside of that, you know, just to get, you know, to be able to drink those.
Yeah, so that was our first 100% state malt and hop beer, but right now, every beer that we're brewing is 20% malt, 20% hop, and what's the next jump from here after 20%?
So the New York State Farm Brewery Act, you know, right now only requires 20%, and you know, it's not that we don't want to use more, just the production isn't there, but and also the demand. 2018, I believe it jumps to 65%, and then 2023, I think it goes up to 90%. And you know, there are certainly skeptics out there who don't think we'll get there. And I for one, you know, think we'll either be there or the law will be adjusted to, you know, account for whatever this. Because you know, for all of the advancements that's made in support of New York State farming. I don't see our legislature leaving them out to dry.
No, definitely not.
Them or the brewers. So I have confidence in it.
Yeah.
And the personal connection that we're able to build with our sources right now is great. We just had one of our hop farmers came down to the brewery 2 weeks ago and sat down, hung out with us, and tried a couple of the beers that we've made with his hops. And it was really cool.
That's fantastic.
And I think the flip side of that, of what we're talking about, is that like you're talking about, that personal connection in that, you know, you could maybe have grains that are custom malted for you to your specifications. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, as more. I know we're having some maltsters are starting up in New York State particularly. So I think, though, that there's you know, there's a huge future for these locally made ingredients.
Yeah, you know, I love what you're saying. I think it's a little further off than maybe we would like
future,
to think.
I said future.
You did say future. So, yeah, let's get everybody up to speed, get more acreage planted out there, and then we'll start to really dial it in.
Definitely.
And also, I mean, raising the awareness to the consumer and making them excited about it. So another issue right now is that the cost of this local ingredient is not it's not cost prohibitive, but it's more than your
so yeah. If I could just plug local brewers or farmers who are brewing with local ingredients, the grains often are twice as much as the regular grain order. The hops often run about three times as much. So it's if you see somebody brewing with those local ingredients, support them because they're making a sacrifice to do it. And often those beers aren't sold at twice or three times the cost. We try to sell them to people at a reasonable cost, but there is a much more significant cost involved with brewing locally.
Yeah, know that you're supporting local farmers. That's an amazing thing these days. So local, usually small farmers. So let's talk about this white coffee stout that you just poured.
So it's not a stout at all. We first did this beer a year ago, and everybody freaked out because it's very golden in color. But I'm going to check everybody's math skills here. It's about 50% wheat, 50% pilsner, and about 20% oats. None of that actually makes sense. But so it's a lot of wheat, a lot of pilsner. We had a little bit of oats to give it a full mouthfeel like a stout. Mm-hmm. And then, all of the traditional roasty notes that would come from the roasted malts all come from this locally roasted coffee. So it doesn't look at all like it tastes. And this beer is one of the two beers we poured at opening bash this week and kind of stole the show where people are coming, you have a white stout? We want to try that. So
it's awesome. It's a really, really cool and really fun beer. How did you do the coffee in this?
So we, the other thing, we wanted to keep it as light in color as we could, so we didn't actually add coffee. We actually ground the coffee, put it into a muslin or mesh bag, and dropped it in after fermentation, left it there for only a few hours, and we'd keep trying it. As soon as it was done, we pulled that coffee back out because we don't want any of the color coming into it. So it's, really kind of light golden in color, but, really, roasty and rich and full in the mouthfeel.
When did you brew it? When did you do the coffee thing?
We've done I think three different batches of this. Okay. So I mentioned earlier how on the old system we did all one-offs with a tap room. We can't do all one-offs because it turns out some people like to have the same beer more than once.
Right.
So we're now changing our beers seasonally. So every 3 months or so we're going to introduce new beers. But so this one was one of our first beers we introduced, and it's now on tap in a number of bars throughout three of the boroughs anyway, but so
my question was mainly directed to, I did the exact same method once, and I had the beer, I had one keg of it left over about 8 months after doing it. I was saving it for an event, and by the time 8 months after, it kind of was, it was pretty wild and crazy, and it might have been a different issue, but I did not sanitize my coffee beans. I didn't dip them in anything. I just did it, just went straight in because there's already coffee in there. I figured it'd be fine.
So did we. Yeah. I can't relate because it didn't stay as long. So,
right.
So maybe.
I'm just asking a stability question.
I do know we just put a new batch on tap at the in our tap room two Fridays ago.
Yeah.
That tasted significantly better than the other one. I guess I didn't notice. I just felt like it was maybe because it was a fresher coffee. And I guess if there's a downside to having the serving tanks that we do is that we're not changing a keg every 15 gallons. It's every 155. So the last couple pours aren't going to be the same as the first couple.
Yeah. Well, this is an awesome beer.
Yeah.
Really, really inspired by
this. I love this beer. Thank you. Yeah.
So what are you guys looking for brewing for your next season? Spring is going to eventually come in New York City.
Yeah, so we just brewed the first two of the spring beers. We have a jalapeno rye coming out and a peanut butter chocolate milk stout.
Right.
Yeah, the jalapenos, we had John and I think three of our interns all gloved up and cut up. We estimate around 800 jalapenos halved and de-seeded And I didn't wear. I typically wear contacts. I didn't even mess with those for the whole week, just in case there was anything residual hanging around, because I didn't want to burn my eyeballs out. But taking the seeds out, so they're all fresh jalapenos. So you were expecting a nice full jalapeno aroma without a lot of the spice. It's going to be spicy, but it's not going to be overpowering.
Yeah, it's not going to be a killer spice.
So tell us about the Brewed Abides before we get out of here.
The Brewed Abides was just started off as a Twitter handle as a little nod to the greatest movie ever created.
That Mary still hasn't seen, shamefully.
I only saw it for the first time a couple months ago.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're going to play it on the TV this week on Friday night at the brewery. So
yeah, we're looking at Big Lebowski night. So all the Little Lebowski Legionnaires out there called...
The Achievers.
The Achievers. The Achievers.
So, but no, it started off as that. And then I just kind of... Another way to just immerse myself in the world of beer. I just wanted to write about it, drink it, brew it, whatever. I just started a blog, made a website, and just kind of picked off with that. And I'm ashamed to say I haven't really kept up with it as well as I could. At first, I just wanted to keep plugging local breweries.
That's good, because that means you're working hard.
Yeah.
Clean, clean, clean.
So tell us about the tap room. When are you guys open?
Our tap room is currently open 3 days a week. So we're open Friday nights 5 to 9, Saturdays noon to 8, and Sundays noon to 6. Although, as soon as this weather breaks, if and when this weather breaks, I'd like to add Thursdays so we can get another day. And once people are more willing to go out and venture out into the, not going into the cold anymore. So
I want to commend the support of the other Long Island City breweries. Like, you guys designed a little.
Be remiss not to say something, right? Yeah. So this for Beer Week, we actually partnered with Rockaway Brewing Company and Transmitter Brewing, who are also in Long Island City, to kind of make Long Island City a beer destination. We have three breweries. We're all one. We're one stop from Manhattan on like seven different lines, and we did a brewery tour passport. This last 2 weeks, if you visited all three, we'd give you a stamp, and we're giving away a bunch of prizes, T-shirts, glassware, some growlers, some different stuff. So it was kind of a great way for people to come out and experience a bunch of different beers. So you go to three breweries, so they're all just walking distance from one another, and it was a great event for all three of us.
Yeah. Long Island City is definitely, I mean, that's the number one brewery destination right now. That's the densest brewery area in New York City, neighborhood in New York City. Yep. How many beers do you typically have on tap at any time?
So we have six, but our tap room's only been open since November. So as we transition over to these new beers, we'll have some stragglers, I expect, so we can introduce I still have a few of those. And then we actually, because we're a farm brewery, we can serve other farm breweries' beers. Mm-hmm. So that was some of the other connections I was able to make during Beer Week this week, was with other farm breweries from Long Island and upstate that we have guest taps. I'm kind of putting some of them on tap. So it'll be our regular six beers, whatever is hanging out from the last season, and hopefully some other farm breweries. So some of those beers we were talking about, where people are brewing with local ingredients, our tap room gives the opportunity to try not only our beers, but some of theirs too.
Awesome. And if people want to find out more about Big Al's Brewery, where do they go?
Well, I would normally tell you to go to our website. It's, I need a little bit of work, but we do most of our communications through social media. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, anything new and exciting, we try to stay pretty on top of that.
What's your handle?
At Big Al's Brewing.
Big Al's Brewing.
Now, I've heard this Rupert Cup has been having some adventures.
Yeah, so Rupert's Cup was presented to us yesterday afternoon. And made its way to Queens by late afternoon. And by the end of the evening, it had its own Twitter handle. So it is at Rupert's Cup. And he was lucky enough to have the Brewed Abides, a.k.a. John, read it Good Night Brew last night to conclude its first night in Queens.
And also thank you to everyone who voted.
How many mouths did your votes alone feed?
Yeah, so all the votes for Big Al's were able to contribute $875 and provide 3,500 meals for State Harvest.
3,500 meals, your votes.
And the other thing, I want to tout Queens here a little bit. The second and third place breweries were Bridge and Tunnel and Transmitter, and say Queens breweries. And I think it's kind of a shame that it wasn't promoted more heavily, because I think we could have collectively as breweries raised a lot more money for City Harvest. But I'm really proud of those three, in particular. I think we really
absolutely
pushed it.
Absolutely.
I feel a heavy competition coming next year.
If
I hope so.
This cup
that's
is gorgeous.
What this creates, that's perfect. I mean, we had a big push, and it was just in our tap room. We were so busy because, in part because of the passport. that people were waiting to get beers, and so rather than letting them sit around getting frustrated, I was just walking around our tap room thanking people for coming out and asking while they were waiting if they didn't mind going on and voting and making some contributions to City Harvest. So I don't know if that means we stole the cup or not, but even if we didn't win, it was great to see. I think total was somewhere around $2,000 was raised for City Harvest.
$2,500 somewhere in that area.
Yeah.
But now when people are waiting in line at your tap room, you can actually just fill a pitcher. You can fill the Rupert's cup and go to line and give everybody samples of what
we did drink out of Rupert's cup yesterday. Yeah. So I think we're gonna set it out and maybe have it as a open contribution for people to make to City Harvest.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So, take your picture with the cup tonight. We got planned. We got all kinds of big events. Follow Rupert's Cup on Twitter. He'll let you know what's going on.
Well, Kyle, John, thank you so much for joining us on Ferment About It.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers. Ferment About It over here.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.